in hopes it will help you in your own reading. Prabhupada once said something to the effect that you could have variety in the way you read or studied his books, and even though the books are perfect, because we're not so perfect in our concentration, we may get tired of reading one of the books and then want to read something else. And that's nice, not to get tired, but to go to keep alive and refreshed, to experience variety. So now some of the devotees have introduced very studious ways of reading and studying the books. And so sometimes we want to do that, and sometimes we want to just read for spiritual relief and solace and so on. So what I'm relating is just some things, the way I've been reading recently, doesn't mean that it's not, that you should do it now, or that it's better than study with notes and so on. In fact, I kept study with notes for every verse all the way up to the, half of the last volume of the ninth canto. So I know the benefit of that. But more recently I began to read the Krishna book. I read the whole Krishna book starting in Jagannath Puri in December. And then I started just reading, just opening wherever I felt I wanted to read in it. And it's been a real pleasure to become attracted to Krishna's life and Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, as he's described in Krishna book. And I began to study Krishna book along with the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In a sense, it's like the reward of all our endeavors to be able to just read directly about Krishna. And so then, as some of you were coming to the classes I was holding in Baltimore, I began making outlines for a course, and specifically on, within the Krishna book, the cream of Krishna's pastimes are considered by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. So I prepared the classes on those particular parts. And it really, it focuses your devotion in the best way to the all-attractive Krishna, and becomes more real for you. So, what I wanted to discuss tonight was something particular about Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, and then a couple of sections which reveal some of the inner meaning of these pastimes from some of the acharyas and from some other Puranas. I'll explain that. But the particular part of Krishna's pastimes I want to discuss is how Krishna left Vrindavan. Although there are no devotees greater than the devotees in the residents of Vrindavan, and he gave them his association more intimately than he gave any other devotees, including the members of the Yadu dynasty and so on. Yet he left them to go on to do other activities. And they could not understand why he left, or to put it better, after he left, they were just stunned in the separation from Krishna. So there's one chapter where it's called Uddhava Visits Vrindavan. Well, Krishna expresses to Uddhava that he's aware that the gopis are especially in great pain of separation from him. And so he sends Uddhava back to give them some association from Krishna and a letter from Krishna. But so in the beginning of that chapter, Prabhupada discusses a little bit more this why Krishna left, or why he didn't come back, let's say. Why he left, we understand in terms of what he had to do. He had to kill demons, and he had to give association to his mother and father. But He promised that he would come back, and apparently he didn't come back. And even after we get the explanations of this, it may be that some part of us is a little very sympathetic with the residents of Vrindavan and can't figure out, why didn't he just go back and make a visit? It wasn't so far away. Why leave them so heartbroken, or why make a promise that you're going to come back? So what I'm going to speak tonight is going to, if you have any doubts like that, it's going to give you some solace. But first I'll read what Prabhupada has in the Krishna book. This is after the residents of Vrindavan went to Mathura with Krishna for the wrestling match. Then it was over. They stayed there as long as they possibly could. Then they had to go back. But he didn't go back. So that was the real crunch. So, which the gopis knew. The gopis didn't go to Vrindavan. And they knew what was up, that Krishna wasn't going to come back. But everybody else, they went with Krishna to Mathura. They thought it was a nice festival. But then they got it there in Mathura when they had to come back, and Krishna wasn't coming back. So this is described here, that how they had to go back without him. That was very pitiful. Nanda Maharaj returned to Vrindavan without Krishna and Balaram. He was accompanied only by the cowherd boys and men. It was certainly a very pathetic scene for the gopis, Mother Yasoda, Srimati Radharani, and all the residents of Vrindavan. Many devotees have tried to make adjustments to Krishna's being away from Vrindavan because, according to expert opinion, Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, never goes even a step out of Vrindavan. He always remains there. The explanation of expert devotees is that Krishna was actually not absent from Vrindavan. He came back with Nanda Maharaj as promised. When Krishna was going to Mathura on the chariot driven by Akrura and the gopis were blocking the way, Krishna assured them that he was coming back just after finishing his business in Mathura. He told them not to be overwhelmed and in this way pacified them. But when he failed to come back with Nanda Maharaj, it appeared that he either cheated them or could not keep his promise. Expert devotees, however, have decided that Krishna was neither a cheater nor a breaker of promises. Krishna, in his original identity, returned with Nanda Maharaj and stayed with the gopis and Mother Yasoda in his bhava expansion. Krishna and Balaram remained in Mathura, not in their original forms, but in their expansions as Vasudeva and Sankarshan. The real Krishna and Balaram were in Vrindavan in their bhava manifestations. So, this is quite esoteric, that Krishna was there in his bhava, but as far as they seem to be concerned, he wasn't there, and they were experiencing all this lamentation. So from our theoretical point of view, we understand, oh yes, Krishna was there in the absolute sense, because by remembering Krishna in his original form, he was there. And in order to do the other activities as the king, he went to other places. But then when we read what they were experiencing, it wasn't that they felt he was there in the way that they wanted him to be there. And the descriptions are very pitiful. The gopis, they're all devastated. It wasn't business as usual. And then they would get angry with Krishna and chastise his messengers. We know their expressions. And then Mother Yasoda, when Uddhava went there, Nanda spoke to Mother to Uddhava, but she couldn't even speak. She was just crying. And there's descriptions in the Nectar Devotion that the boys are just lying out in the almost passed out, and they're like, their bodies have decreased, and they're not hardly even breathing. So the whole place was devastated because Krishna had left. Even though we get this explanation. So we can take a philosophical point of view with Uddhava, who when he saw Nanda and the others in this mood of lamentation and craziness, he said to them, oh, you're very fortunate. You've attained the highest state of Krishna consciousness. But not so philosophical, but emotionally, their point of view was this feeling that Krishna's cheated us, he broke his promise, he broke our hearts, he's not good for nothing, the gopis' kinds of angry expressions. And then Nanda, more pitifully, not in rebellion, but saying, is there any chance that Krishna may come back? And Mother Yasoda not even talking, and the boys also. So this is what we know from the Krishna book. So now there's some more information that comes up as we read in the 10th canto, as it's been continued by Prabhupada's disciples, which mostly means, well, what we get in addition, is translations of the previous acharyas, Vishwanath Chakrabarti and others, especially Vishwanath Chakrabarti. We may say, well, why should I be interested in hearing something that Prabhupada didn't give us? But if Prabhupada had stayed, he would have given us so many more literatures. In fact, the main source of this, some interesting revelation, comes from the Padma Purana, which Prabhupada said he was going to translate. So he would have given us it. And reading from this BBT book, by Disciples of His Divine Grace. He used to call it the continuation of the great work. But this continuation of Prabhupada's work, it's safe, parampara. And so it's not wrong that we can hear some more and more pastimes about Krishna from these authoritative sources. So the first scene that we're going to look at is another scene when the residents of Vrindavan met Krishna after he left Vrindavan, and that was at the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra. There was an occasion where many, many people gathered and from all over India, and the residents of Vrindavan also came, and they met with Krishna there. So after it was all over and there was a big sacrifice performed by Vasudev, gradually everybody went home. But it's mentioned that Nanda Maharaj stayed for 3 months. And this is in the Krishna book. At the end, it says, the members of the Yadu dynasty tried to please the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They tried to satisfy Nanda Maharaj and his associates by offering them clothing, ornaments, and many other valuable articles. And they all became fully satisfied. Vasudeva, Ugrasena, Lord Krishna, Lord Balaram, Uddhava, and all other members of the Yadu dynasty presented their individual gifts to Nanda Maharaj and his associates. And Nanda Maharaj influenced a great feeling for the friendship of Vasudev. His eyes filled with tears and he began to cry. Desiring to please his friend Vasudev and being affectionately bound with love for Lord Krishna and Balaram, Nanda Maharaj passed 3 months in their association. At the end of this time, all the members of the Yadu dynasty tried to please the inhabitants of Vrindavan to their heart's content. So there's a little hint of course, attraction, attachment of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. But twice Prabhupada said they tried to satisfy them, which implies that, well, maybe they did or maybe he didn't satisfy him. But it appears innocent enough that Nanda is just staying on an extra 3 months, which is a long time, just because he wants to be there with Krishna and with everybody else. Then, however, they finally give him all these gifts and try to pacify them, and then they make their farewells. After Nanda Maharaj received these farewell presentations, he along with his associates started for Brajabhumi Vrindavan. The minds of the inhabitants of Vrindavan remained, however, with Krishna and Balaram, and therefore all of them started for Vrindavan without their minds. That's a very, I don't think it was so funny, but I guess it is on one level. But it's very like it's a knockout kind of a sentence, and not to be taken so lighthearted, that they went without their minds. In other words, they didn't want to go like that. They wanted to stay with Krishna, but they were given a lot of gifts and sweet words, and they left without Krishna and Balaram. So now we see more what actually some more of what actually was going on. This is first from Vishwanath Chakrabarti. Now he's a very wonderful intimate devotee of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, and we're familiar with him from Prabhupada's purports, and now they lean on him even more to carry them through in the purports. And he writes sometimes what appears like interpretations and inner meanings, as if what Krishna says, as if that isn't enough, he sees what was really something even more that's being said. A couple of examples. He knows the exact mood of Krishna and everybody, and so he knows their psychological movements and everything. Well, a couple of examples. One, it was from these purports by Vishwanath Chakravarti. When in the incident where Krishna is asked by the boys to get some food, I think for, in the Yogic Brahmanas episode, they say to Krishna, "Krishna, we're hungry. Would you please get us some food?" So right away he writes, and we can see a little bit his mind. As he sees Krishna's mind, we can see a little bit how Vishwanath Chakravarti's mind works. So he took this statement, the boys are hungry and they're saying to Krishna, "Give us something to eat." This may sound like sense gratification. So he says, actually the boys weren't hungry. How could the boys be hungry and ask Krishna, "Give us something to eat"? He said, actually, they were, because what is a devotee? A devotee is always thinking about Krishna. Is Krishna, even an ordinary brahmachari, he's not supposed to say, "I'm hungry, give me something to eat," to a spiritual master. So he said, actually, they weren't hungry, but they were worried that they'd gone so long without food. Maybe Krishna was hungry. So they feigned hunger and said to Krishna, "Oh, Krishna, we're hungry," so that he could get something to eat. So that's the way Vishnu Chakravarti thinks. And what was another one? There are many like that. He's always got the wonderful rasa to see the inner workings of things. There are a few more, but I can't remember them right now. Okay, so here's what he has to say about that 3 months at the at Kurukshetra. Now here's the verse. Vasudeva speaks very humbly and affectionately to Nanda, how I could never reciprocate your friendship, although I tried. And then Nanda says, on his part, Nanda was also full of affection for his friend Vasudeva. Thus, during the following days, Nanda would repeatedly announce, "I will be leaving later today," and "I will be leaving tomorrow." But out of love for Krishna and Balaram, he remained there for 3 more months, honored by all the Yadus. Next verse. Then after Vasudeva, Ugrasena, Krishna, Uddhava, Balaram, and others had fulfilled his desires and presented him with precious ornaments, fine linen, and varieties of priceless household furnishings, Nanda Maharaj accepted all these gifts and took his leave. Seen off by all the Yadus, he departed with his family members and the residents of Vrindavan. Now here's the purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, at the end of the 3 months, Nanda Maharaj approached Krishna and told him, "My dear son, for one drop of perspiration from your divine face, I am ready to give up countless lives. Let us leave now for Braja. I cannot spend any more time here." This is what he was trying to do. Then he went to Vasudeva and told him, "My dear friend, please send Krishna to Braja." And of King Ugrasena he requested, "Please order my friend to do this. If you refuse, I'll have to drown myself here in Lord Parsaram's lake. Just watch if you do not believe me. We people of Braja came to this holy place not to gain some piety on the occasion of the solar eclipse, but to get Krishna back or die." Hearing these desperate words from Nanda, Vasudeva and the others tried to pacify him with valuable gifts. So that's him. Prabhupada said they tried to please him. Now I know this is what they were up against. Well-versed in the arts of diplomacy, Vasudeva consulted with his most trustworthy advisors and then satisfied Sri Nanda by telling him, "My dearest friend, O King of Braja, it is of course true that none of you can live without Krishna, and how can we allow you to kill yourselves? Therefore, by all means, I must send Krishna back to Braja. I will do so right after we accompany him and his relatives and friends, among them many helpless women, back to Dwarka. Then, the very next day, without trying to obstruct him in any way, I will let him leave for Braja at an auspicious time of the day. This I swear to you 1,000 times over. After all, how can we who came here with Krishna go home without him? What will people say about us? You are a great scholar in all these matters, so please forgive me for making this request of you." Next, Ugrasena addressed Nanda Maharaj. So it's already said that they met together before talking to Nanda, all these highly skilled Kshatriyas. And Nanda is a simple Vaishya. Ugrasena, "My dear master of Braja, I bear witness to Vasudeva's statement, and I take this solemn vow. I will send Krishna back to Braja, even if I have to do it by force." Then Lord Krishna, joined by Uddhava and Balaram, spoke to Nanda in private. He said, "Dear father, if I go to Braja today, leaving aside all these Rishnis, they will die from the pain of separation from me. then many thousands of enemies more powerful than even Keshi and Arishta will come to annihilate all these kings. Since I am omniscient, I know what is inevitably going to happen to me. Listen, and I will describe it to you. After returning to Dwarka, I will receive an invitation from Yudhisthira, and I will go to Indraprastha to participate in the Rajasuya sacrifice. There I will kill Shishupala, after which I will return again to Dwarka and kill Shalva. Next, I will travel to a place just south of Mathura to save you by killing Dantavakra. I will then go back to Braja, see all my old friends, and again sit in your lap with great pleasure. Indeed, with great happiness, I will spend the rest of my life with you. God has written this fate on my forehead, and it has been written on your foreheads, that until the day I return, you must tolerate separation from me. Neither of our destinies can possibly be changed, so please find the courage to leave me here for now and go home to Braja. And if in the meantime, you, my dear parents, and you, my beloved friends, are distressed by the unavoidable fate written on our foreheads, then, whenever you wish to feed me some delicacy, or play some game with me, or simply see me, just close your eyes and I will appear before you to turn your torment into sky flowers and fulfill all your desires. I promise you this, and the young friends of mine whose lives I saved in a forest fire can vouch for it. Convinced by all these arguments that his son's happiness was of prime importance, Nanda accepted the gifts offered to him and took his leave, accompanied by the Yadu's large army. So that's the promise that Krishna made, that he would come back. Now, another section describes what actually he did after killing Dantravakra. In the Krishna book, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the chronology is not exact, and this chapter of the gathering at the solar eclipse, which comes after in the book, it actually happened before the killing of Dantravakra. So now let's look at this, what happened after killing Dantravakra. And this is even more amazing in terms of the lack of any trace that you'll find in the Krishna book or in the Srimad Bhagavatam verses about what's described in the purport. And the purport is all taken from the Padma Purana. So it's, if you think, well, Vishwanath Chakrabarti, he's only one acharya. But this information we're going to read now, which is quite astounding, it all comes from the Padma Purana, which is one of the sattvic Puranas. So all we're just reading, if you know your Krishna book, how Krishna fought Shalva, and firstly there was a big war at Dwarka, and then Krishna himself participated and destroyed Shalva's mystic airplane, and then killed Shalva, and then Shalva's friend Dantavakra came forward. So we're not told what happened after that, except there's just some philosophical commentary, and then all of a sudden it says, once upon a time Lord Balaram heard the Kurus were preparing for war with the Pandavas, and being neutral, he departed on the pretext of going to bathe in holy places. So it's just a completely different story is being told. But here's what actually happened here after the killing of Dantravakra. It's what Krishna promised would happen. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti gives the following elaborate commentary on this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's from Vishwanath, but he quotes Padma Purana. From the Padma Purana, hearing that Shishupala had been killed, Dantravakra went to Mathura to fight against Krishna. So this fight took place in a different place. When Krishna heard of this, he mounted his chariot and went to Mathura. Then it describes the fight, a battle that lasted all day, and Krishna finally killed Dantravakra. In this passage of the Padma Purana, the words Krishna's two touch Chutva, when Krishna heard of this, indicate that the Lord heard from Narada, who travels as swiftly as the mind, that Dantravakra had gone to Mathura. Therefore, immediately after killing Shalva, without first entering Dwarka, the Lord reached the vicinity of Mathura in a single moment on his chariot, which also moves as swiftly as the mind, and there he saw Dantravakra. Thus it is that even today, by the gate of Mathura, facing the direction of Dwarka, there is a village known in the vernacular as Datiha, or derived from the Sanskrit Dantravakraha. After killing him, Krishna crossed the Yamuna and went to the cowherd village of Nanda, where he honored and consoled his aggrieved parents. They drenched him with tears and embraced him, and then the Lord offered obeisances to the elder cowherd men and gratified all the residents with abundant gifts of clothing, ornaments, and so on. And then the verses are quoted right straight from the Padma Purana and the translation. Lord Keshava sported continuously with the cowherd women on the Kalindi's charming bank, which was filled with pious trees. Thus the Supreme Lord, assuming the appearance of a cowherd, resided there for 2 months, enjoying the pleasure of intimate pastimes and various moods of loving reciprocation. Then, by Lord Vasudeva's grace, Nanda and all the other residents of that place, together with their children and wives, assumed their eternal spiritual forms, boarded a celestial airplane, and ascended to the spiritual Vaikuntha planet, Goloka Vrindavan. Lord Krishna, however, after bestowing on Nanda Gopa and all the other inhabitants of Braja his own transcendental abode, which is free of all disease, traveled to the sky and returned to Dwarka as demigods chanted his praises. Srila Rupa Goswami comments as follows on this passage in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And that's the Sanskrit is given in the translation. Since Drona and other demigods had previously descended on earth, you know Drona and Dara, they're the persons who became Nanda and Yasoda. Since Drona and other demigods had previously descended to earth to merge as partial expansions into the king of Braja and other devotees of Vrindavan, at this time it was these demigod expansions whom Lord Krishna sent off to Vaikuntha. Lord Hari is perpetually enjoying pastimes in Vrindavan with his intimate devotees, the residents of Gokula, who are dearer to him than his most dear other devotees. So, just as during Lord Ramchandra's incarnations, the residents of Ayodhya were transported to Vaikuntha in their self-same bodies, so in this incarnation of Krishna, the residents of Braja attained Goloka in theirs. So Krishna was still on the earth performing his pastimes, but he wound up the Gokula pastimes, first staying there with them, and then sending them to Goloka Vrindavan, where he always resides. Lord Krishna's journey from Dwarka to Braja is confirmed by the following passages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, even in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a hint of this whole pastime. This is, I think, 111.9. Yarhi Ambujaksha Pasara. Maybe Queen Kunti, I'm not sure. O Lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. So this is a... this is a devotee of Dwarka complaining or lamenting that Krishna sometimes goes away to Vrindavan. Lord Krishna had been harboring a desire to go see his friends and relatives in Braja ever since Lord Baladev had gone there. But his mother, father, and other elders in Dwarka had refused to give him permission. Now, however, after the killing of Shalva, when Krishna heard from Narada that Dantravaka had gone to Mathura, no one could object to the Lord's going there immediately without first entering Dwarka. So this Dantravakra connection is that it's near Vrindavan, so he was already in Mathura, so he went to Vrindavan. And he would have the opportunity to meet his friends and relatives living in Braja. Thinking like this and also remembering Uddhava's allusion to the gopis in the words, Gayanti te vishada karma, he went to Braja, dispelling the feelings of separation of the inhabitants. For 2 months, Lord Krishna enjoyed in Vrindavan just as before, previous to his leaving there to kill Kamsa in Mathura. Then at the end of 2 months, he withdrew his Braja pastimes from mundane eyes by taking the demigod portions of his parents and other relatives and friends to Vaikuntha. Thus, in one complete plenary manifestation, he went to Goloka in the spiritual world. In another, he remained perpetually enjoying in Braja while invisible to material eyes. And in yet another, he mounted his chariot and returned alone to Dwarka. The people of Shorasena province thought that after killing Dantravakara, Krishna had paid a visit to his parents and other dear ones and now was returning to Dwarka. The people of Braja, on the other hand, could not understand where he had suddenly disappeared to, and so they were totally astonished. Furthermore, Shukadeva considered that Maharaj Parikshit might think, how is it that the same Krishna who caused the cowherds to attain Vaikuntha in their self-same bodies also caused the residents of Dwarka to attain such an inauspicious condition in the course of his Moshala Lila? That means that the Yadu dynasty they wound up their earthly pastimes in a very violent way by killing each other, whereas the residents of Vrindavan, they were just sent. So Shukadeva knew that Maharaj Parikshit would think this. Thus the king might consider the arrangement unfair because of his own affinity for the Yadus. That is why Shukadeva Goswami did not allow him to hear this pastime, which, as mentioned above, is related in the Uttarakhanda of Sri Padma Purana. In the Vaishnava Toshani, Sanatana Goswami's commentary on the 10th canto, we find the following sequential list of pastimes. And it just tells, first was a journey on the occasion of the solar eclipse, then the Rajasuya assembly, then the gambling match. That's why sometimes devotees also get confused that Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, they're there like real friendly. But it was before the war. First there was the journey on the occasion of the solar eclipse, then the Rajasuya assembly, then the gambling match and attempted disrobing of Draupadi, then the Pandavas exile to the forest, then the killing of Shalva and Dantravaka, then Krishna's visit to Vrindavan, and finally the winding up of the Vrindavan pastimes. So, in one sense, you might say it's rather technical, but we're also students of Krishna Leela, so it kind of rounds things out. And I mentioned that point that we can feel satisfied that Krishna did, even in human terms, keep his promise and go back and make a visit, and then he showed his great devotion for the residents of Vrindavan. Just like he said, I cannot repay you in any way, be satisfied with your service. But he treated them very specially, even in these different ways. But nevertheless, the mood remains, because apparently this was very near the end of his pastimes. So the main mood is still there, that he left and for a long time was away from his devotees, and they had to experience separation. We can pause for some questions or comments. Yes.
So when Krishna wound up the Vrindavan pastimes, he stayed behind in his Vasudeva form?
Well, it describes a three-way division. Let me read it one more time. Just one sentence. Thus, in one complete plenary manifestation, he went to Goloka in the spiritual world. In another, he remained perpetually enjoying in Braja while invisible to material eyes. So that's the second one was where he always was, in his bhava expansion. And they were, so after that visit, the residents of Braja, they again were in the mood of some lamentation, Krishna's not here. But a demigod portion of them, so they also have expanded forms. That went back to Vaikuntha, and another part of them was manifest there in feeling in separation from Krishna. So correspondingly, an expansion of Krishna was in the spiritual world. One remained in the bhava unseen in Goloka, and another one went right back into the Dwarka pastimes. Thus, in one complete plenary manifestation, he went to Goloka in the spiritual world. In another, he remained perpetually enjoying in Braja while invisible to materialize. And in yet another, he mounted his chariot and returned to Dwarka. That's what he did. And then here's how they responded to it. The people of Shaurasena thought that after killing Dantravaka, he had paid a visit to his parents and now was returning. And people of Braja could not understand where he had suddenly disappeared to. That's all I know. I couldn't elaborate on that. That's what is described there. Krishna has inconceivable potencies to fulfill all his different pastimes. Of course, there is no reason, human reason, why he causes separation from his pure devotees. There was a nice verse discussing this, and we had a class in Brooklyn about this, about talking about separation. And we read that Krishna says, that he does this to increase the affection of the devotees for him. And because otherwise the devotee may take Krishna too cheaply, he says. And Prabhupada makes a comment that if you lose some money and then you gain it again, you have a very dear attachment to it. So the idea of losing Krishna and then waiting for him to come back is one explanation as to why he does it. And the devotees, they get their heart's desire, which is they want to increase their love for Krishna. So if it gets increased in that way, then they're pleased.
Statement that as in the talks with Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, the progressive stages of realization, Krishna consciousness, what's higher than this and higher than this, the highest was separation.
Oh, yeah.
And for that reason, Bhaktivinoda Thakur apparently spent his last days in Kurukshetra.
Hmm. Oh, because that's the setting of the solar eclipse. Well, and Lord Chaitanya, that was what he expressed at the Rath Yatras in Puri, that the gopis wanted to take Krishna back to Vrindavan. When we were giving the classes in Baltimore, the devotees were asking questions, and sometimes the questions were, on the whole, everyone really liked hearing about Krishna without any apologies, so to speak, without any connections to Varnashram Dharma or need to prove anything. We're just talking about the nectar of Krishna's childhood pastimes up to the pastimes of the gopis. But still, some devotees honestly said, but this seems to be so apart from my actual concerns. We're struggling to make a living every day, and then what has this got to do with our actual concerns? So not just that I had the answers, but everyone was thinking about this and making comments, and some devotees wrote me notes about it too in letters. And well, we're supposed to hear about Krishna even in the struggle for existence, so that at the end, when it's a great struggle, then you can think of Krishna. That's what Prabhupada writes in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. And he asked Arjuna to think of him in the midst of the struggle on the battlefield so that he would be able to think of him at the end of life. We shouldn't think that, this is it. This is my religion, or this is the highest part of Krishna consciousness, but I can't do it now. I'll do it when I'm older or something. Well, we should hear the Krishna book now, and all the parts, all the books, as much as we can, a little bit every day. I was mentioning in the beginning that I've been reading the Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada says, even in the Krishna book, that the professional reciters, or the sahajiyas, they tend to go only to Krishna's lila with the gopis. He said, but that we don't preach like that. We say that not a drop of Srimad Bhagavatam should be rejected. It's all important. But I think sometimes, at least in myself, I'd almost developed a mentality that it's all important except the Krishna Lila. Or that's like not touchable by us. But that's like our greatest pleasure, is that we won't be sahajiyas, because we hear everything. But we should certainly hear about this. And actually, if you think of it in terms of the daily Srimad Bhagavatam class, you won't get that. You won't read the Krishna book. You'll only go up to chapter 13 or 11, and then or 12, and then you'll stop, because we don't usually read these books. But the Krishna book, that contains all the pastimes, and we don't have to be so in the name of austerity or whatever it is, some idea of being strict, that we don't hear about Krishna's pastimes. They're very wonderful. So That should be done. And in the Vedic culture, it was like that. Prabhupada said everyone would work hard all day, and then they would get together in the evening, and they would hear about Krishna or Lord Rama, and they'd go home and sleep. They wouldn't think, what has this got to do with selling cloth in the cloth shop, or what has this got to do with what I'm doing? But that was there. Just like the Karmis, they work hard all day, and they go home and watch TV, or go to the movies, or whatever. They don't think, what does this have to do with? But they're just waiting to go and do that. That's part of their life. So, on the weekend, they really do that kind of thing. So, but a devotee, his entertainment, his pleasure, his philosophy, his religious participation should be kept up, even and not be overwhelmed by other responsibilities. Otherwise, something's wrong. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the material side has to be there, but there has to be a spiritual side to life too. And if we have some kind of, if we develop some way that's compatible with our work a day, to read in a nice way. Some of the devotees were sharing their realizations. One devotee was saying that, which is a similar idea that I was pursuing. It was Mother Mahendrani. She was saying that, and another devotee was saying the same thing to her. She said that they were realizing more that Srimad Bhagavatam, or Krishna book, is actually person, and it's Krishna, and that Krishna is speaking to us. And at that very point, that what has this got to do with me? I'm so harassed, or I've got so many other concerns than hearing how Krishna went to Vrindavan or left Vrindavan. But actually, if you listen to Krishna, he's speaking to you too, here in 1990, in your position, through his pastimes. They weren't done just for a small group, but when he speaks to Krishna, to Arjuna, or when he speaks to Radharani, if you listen carefully, he's actually speaking to you. And you can have a personal darshan with Krishna and Prabhupada by that kind of receptive reading. And it becomes not a dull thing, but something that you look forward to doing. We are harassed on all sides by the senses and by this material world, and that's what the books are for. The books aren't an added harassment, like a homework assignment. I've got enough to do, now they want me to read the book. But rather, we say, yeah, please read the book, because otherwise you're just suffering. There's one verse uses the image that there's an elephant, and he's running in the forest, and it's full of fire. The only relief he can get is if he dives into the river. So similarly, we're harassed in the material world, and if we can dive into the river of Krishna's pastimes, then we'll get relief from the forest fire.
Materialists who instruct on how to be successful in business, they say, in the course of your pursuance of millions of dollars, make sure you take time to enjoy the things that really, make sure you take time to play tennis if that's what you really do. Make sure you take time to, otherwise your quest for money eventually will lose its meaning.
Even taking it that way. So we have to constantly reform. I say reading reform. We have to always reform habits that they so easily fall apart. And start them up again by one, whatever appeals to you, any kind of reading method, and whatever time you have in the day, a little sacred time to do it. You should. It's like a game or a trick with yourself to get yourself to do it. You do any little thing that works. What's your secret, Vijayatama Prabhu? I know you like to read, and you do many other things besides that.
Well, I was thinking in relation to a question back.
All right.
You're discussing about how reading the whole Srimad Bhagavatam and all this in the past time, and because I read this very interesting quote on the way to Giranagi today, it was in the teachings of the Lord Caitanya, where at the very beginning Prabhu was saying that a pure devotee doesn't want to worship any of the demigods or any of the other incarnations of Krishna. And I was relating that to my own personal self, because the past year I've gone through different periods where I was chanting Sringa Kavacha like a lot, and when I was doing it so much I was thinking, yeah, I'm almost becoming like a Sringa Kavacha, not proper. And then I would go back and then I start doing it again and go back and forth. And so like on one side of the coin, we want to read the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, again and again, all the different pastimes, different incarnations, but then on the other side we have to realize that we're a Krishna Bhakta.
Yeah. And then when we read the other parts, we'll understand, or we'll get more of a feeling that they're also coming from Krishna. Molly?
Molly's interested in the subject of anger. And it came up a couple of times. You know, there's like, the gopi's anger is actually a glorified form of love for Krishna. But then that was something new about Maharaj Pariksit not being allowed to hear that pastime. I was maybe reading into it, but it sounded like, you know, he might get a little angry for doing that. And it seemed like a different, it was like, I don't know, what was it like protecting him, or if it was not considered a purified form of anger? Or?
Well, he definitely... Sukadeva anticipated that he would have a real partisan spirit. But that's also part of... Krishna likes that when devotees love him so much in their own particular way that they feel he doesn't reciprocate properly and he gets angry. We heard it, a tape, and they played it for one Sunday lecture. And Prabhupada said, everyone is worshipping Krishna with awe and reverence, so sometimes he becomes disgusted. And he said, and he wants to be chastised by a devotee. So he arranges like that. Mother Yasoda gets angry with Krishna. So with his intimate devotees, he likes that. And then he, as husband and wife, he tried to incite anger even in Rukmini, but she wouldn't get angry. She was so submissive. And then he said to her, I'm sorry, I was just joking, I wanted to get you angry. So there, it's there, but with those devotees, it's part of their rasa with Krishna. Now, I was trying to think of another inner meaning in which Vishwanath Chakravarti said something that wasn't literally apparent in a verse, and I remember the other one, maybe because it's a little bit with that anger. In the Krishna book, it tells that after Krishna left the rasa dance, then the gopis were searching for him, and then they came upon the tracks of Krishna and one gopi. So their first feeling was envy and sorry. They said, who is this gopi who Krishna is favoring? Their first sentiment was envy. So Vishwanath Chakravarti, he says, well, that envy... that was only felt by Chandravali's party of those gopis. He said, but the other gopis, they who were Radharani's followers, they saw those Radharani's footsteps, and so they weren't jealous. That's another example of how he just keeps opening up by his intense meditation on the situation. What is the inner meaning? And that makes sense. Why would Radharani's followers be jealous or envious? Their whole life is to see Radharani with Krishna. So that was their fulfillment when they saw her footsteps. But the verse just says, the gopis saw that one special devotee, Radharani, was with Krishna and became angry. So they become the two camps, they become angry with each other. Well, you like to collect examples of anger, but this is pure anger. Not like when we become angry in this world. When I started traveling, the first day I went to Baltimore, there was a verse all about anger. And then I went to Philadelphia and I got another verse all about anger. And it both was saying how terrible anger is and how a devotee forgives, so he's not angry. And it was just like, I gave the whole class about, because that's one of the three gateways to hell, krodha, lobha, and kama. So all about how anger is so terrible. And then they asked for questions right away. Devotee said, well, can anger be used in the service of Krishna? Looking for the exception. Yes, but have you digested all this about how bad anger is? No, we just want to know how we can use it. Because it's here. So yes, you can use anger, be angry at the demons, or be angry at your own lack of Krishna consciousness.
Like Prabhupada said, the more you kick on the face of Darwin, the more you can.
What's the time? All right, I guess we end that. All glories of Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.